Bradley Basker. Stats Adam.
Live from the K-Wer Studios here at Washington University in St. Louis. Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad. Brad Lewis is away this week again.
Playoff? Oh, playoff?
Let's win a game.
Hi, Dr. Jeff here.
What's up, Milo?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Join the Facebook page, Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad.
It's Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad, with Brad and Stats Adam.
Episode number 84. Welcome to Washington University in St. Louis on April 11th. It's a Friday. It's a beautiful Friday out here. Well, I guess outside the Palatial Studios, the K-Wer Studios here in St. Louis, Missouri. We got Bradley Basker coming in a few minutes, but this is Stats Adam Lowenstein hanging on for a few minutes. Just, should we say, just, you know, killing time until Brad comes? Hey! Ah, perfect timing. So, it was the last few weeks without Brad. He'll be coming in right now with his lunch, his backpack, with his water bottle, with his wallet. I do have a surprise for Brad at the end of the show, which I think he'll enjoy, but we'll get to that at the end. We got a lot to talk about. We got a lot of fun stuff on the docket here. Do we want to start off with a little March Madness?
Let's do it.
All right, great.
Good to be back.
I know, it's been a while.
Well, you had UConn winning it. I obviously wasn't here last
I
week.
Did? So oh, yeah, you're right. Wow.
Take it away, man. It's all you.
I actually, it was just a, you know, should I say crapshoot? I think that's really what I thought it was. You
got to give yourself credit.
Sure, thank you. Wow, I'm usually pretty bad at these. Did terribly in the bracket. Oh, we were two of the worst in the bracket competition. Yeah, we're proud to say it.
I think I missed out by a few points.
Ah, yes, we were talking about that. You were trying to do the math on, and then we thought the Broncos cornerback ended up winning it.
Yeah,
but that was just a friend of ours on campus here that has a similar name as a injured NFL player.
Just going back to the history of your pools. Was that the worst output anyone's ever had?
Oh, definitely. It's, you know, when you look at it, you're right, you had a 7-8 in the championship. No one had that. I think they maybe one person in Kentucky in the finals. I'm trying to remember, but oh, it was one of the worst. It was kind of crazy. We had the best first round for almost anybody I think ever. It was at least the best first round in the last few seasons. So that was the crazy thing. So we went from having maybe the best early season performance to the worst Final Four. The thing was, though, for how poorly everybody did March Madness-wise, picks, everything like that, it was maybe one of the best tournaments I've seen in a long time. Maybe the best tournament since I've actually followed it game by game, since I've enjoyed it game by game. You know, of course, there's ways to improve it, but being able to watch almost every game, you actually saw just how great Kentucky made it as a low seed. For some reason, people thought they were an underdog. It was very odd that they turned into an underdog.
Well, they didn't deserve a higher seed based on how they played. If you wanted to give them a higher seed, you were giving it to them based on their talent and their potential. So it was a tough call if you're the committee, you know, making the bracket, the seeds. They're a young team. They hadn't played up to their potential. So they gave them an 8. But, I mean, you look back on it, it looks kind of foolish because of just the stack of talent that they had on the team. And all it takes is just, you know, a hot run, a good run, you know, getting hot at the right time, gelling together, and you're in the finals. But ultimately, Connecticut pulled it out. And the biggest point I had coming into this show today about the Connecticut team is I still don't feel like they're the best team in the country. I don't know if you get that sense. I know that they won every game and they beat some of the best teams. I don't know. I'm not sure they were the best team. Just like I'm not sure they were the best team when they won in 2011.
Took the words right out of my mouth. Kemba Walker, we were actually relating Shabazz Napier's run this year to Kemba Walker's run a few years ago there. The crazy part about it is that they're almost the exact same size. They're almost, well, I guess, I don't know, Shabazz seems to get a little bit extra leeway as far as the height and weight, but I just can tell you, it's almost the exact same player, which is crazy. I know Shabazz actually played with Kemba in that 2011 team. There were three players that actually won both championships with UConn. The crazy part is just the idea that the UConn Huskies just came out of nowhere, really. You know, no one even thought about them as a possible finals pick at least 2 years ago, 3 years ago when they won it. They had a chance. You know, it wasn't like it came out of the blue. And even Dr. Jeff had them. I wouldn't say he took a shot in the dark. If he took UConn this year, then it would have been a shot in the dark. So, you know, and the crazy thing is that you wouldn't have seen this coming just because this was a championship game. This is the first one since 1966 that was the famous Texas Western Kentucky one, ironically enough, that both the teams in the championship did not play in the tournament the previous year.
Wow.
Kentucky lost to Robert Morris in the first round last year, and UConn didn't make it. So,
well, did I think
UConn, well, I'm sorry, yeah, yes, it was not eligible. Make it.
Yeah, they pulled themselves out preemptively, but no, you're right. It was a pretty spectacular tournament all the way around. There were really not that many blowouts. I don't remember any 30-point wins, and there were a few double-digit wins, but for the most part, games went down to the wire. They at least kept you engaged for the first 36 minutes of the game. And, you know, and then free throws kick in and a team can win by 10 points. But they were just game after game seemed like they were down to the wire, high intensity, high tension action. And it seemed like Kentucky was in the midst of all those. There was the game against Wichita State, which you were at. There was a game against Michigan, obviously the three-pointer with 3 seconds left, and then obviously the three-pointer to beat Wisconsin.
Got to share that moment together. Oh, my jeez.
It was tremendous. So I thought it was a great tournament, as did you, Stats. It really was. I love now that you can watch every game on TV.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask you quickly, what are your thoughts on the... So for those that weren't aware, and I wasn't aware until Stats told me, the games were being televised on TBS, the Saturday night Final Four games. But if you had wanted to, you could have tuned into TNT or True TV to watch one of the respective teams' local broadcast.
Oh, I'm sorry, not even local. It was like national home bias. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
It wasn't, I don't think it was the guys who were doing the regular season broadcast were taken to do that. It was guys like Donnie Marshall, I don't think, do the regular season. I don't know.
But who have the bias for
exactly.
The team
that's
calling.
What I thought.
Interesting. I have no idea. All I know is that I didn't know about it, and so I can't imagine it was that well rated because you had to know about it in order to watch it. And I know, Stats, you got a little thing for Jim Nance. I don't know if you just want to clear the air on that one. But I think he's great at whatever sport he does, but you seem to not think that he brings that much to the table. Is that right?
All right. First of all, no intensity. The greatest thing that... So I have more intensity in my voice when I'm talking normally. When a big dunk happens, it's, the dunk. It's like golf. He's a perfect golf announcer, and he focuses on that. He does a great job for CBS in all facets. I'm pretty sure he'll be doing this weekend for the Masters. The problem is, and I think I was reading this on Awful Announcing, which is a great blog about announcers, stuff like that and everything. And they had a lot of things about improving it. Number one is the biggest storyline, or the biggest not talked about storyline, how Jim Nance is possibly the worst announcer they have in the tournament. Yeah. So I'm not the only one. I'm glad. It's great to have Kerr. It's great to have... I know Greg Anthony does a good job as well. And I was listening to Kerr last night on TNT. He's just a great... You know, they can do a great job at analyzing the game. The problem is when you got a play-by-play guy who puts you to sleep, I can't watch it. That's why I even considered switching to TBS or True TV. Why not? Well, this is the problem. They don't want to take away from Nance. They don't want to put, like, the secondary crew on, you know, one of the better crews that does the Sweet 16 or anything like that on a different station. They want to do the lower-level home bias teams. I feel like either let Nance focus so he can actually know basketball, or, you know, get... Yeah, he barely... Also, he doesn't do that much basketball. He does maybe 10 games a year, max.
Yeah, if that.
That's the problem. He's not a basketball guy, and I enjoy him doing the football stuff. He's pretty solid for football. It's fine. It's just not his... That's not his game. It's frustrating to listen to. I was glad to be over at your place so I didn't have to listen to him. We listened to, like, three words he said.
Yep. No, I think that's where we differ. For me, at least basketball, mm-hmm. the play-by-play guy, especially for TV, I think radio is a little bit different. You have to bring that energy. Whereas Sean Grandy of the Celtics, he's amazing at that. And there's a few guys I can think of in the NBA that are outstanding with radio. With TV, I'm more inclined to listen to the analysts, the color guys, and they have to be the ones that know what they're saying. Because the play-by-play, ultimately, I'm not really listening to because I'm watching the game. I know enough about basketball that I'm not reliant on the information that they're bringing about the logistics of the game. I want to see more, or I want to hear more what Greg Anthony has to say about why they're shooting the three instead of going for the two. So that's just kind of my perspective on that, but I can understand why Jim Nance doesn't fill that void that a Marv Albert does or Kevin Harlan. Those guys, those guys really bring the energy.
Exactly.
But for me in basketball, I don't need that.
Really?
So I don't take that away. I don't take that away from him.
I understand. All right, so there's small instances. They're few and far between. But when you have either the analyst or a guest, so Danny Ainge was doing the Celtics on Wednesday. Another one. Dirk Nowitzki came in as a guest when he was injured like a year or two ago, and he just went ballistic off of a dunk. It's one of the best.
Tremendous.
I think a Brandon Wright dunk or something like that. And he just, let's go home,
yeah,
baby!
Yeah.
It's great. I want that from a play-by-play announcer because that's all I need, especially TV. Mike Gorman, the three from Jeff Green. He goes nuts when the corner three to beat the Heat.
No, it definitely adds value.
Yeah.
I'm not disputing that. I mean, I think an engaged play-by-play guy that brings the passion and the energy is outstanding. But I wouldn't go as far to say that I don't like listening to Nance because he doesn't do that.
Interesting.
So, anyway, we'll leave it at that. No, I don't think there are many other NCAA thoughts unless you have anything.
I did have one question. You mentioned before that both UConn teams were not the best teams in the pool or even in NCAA in general, in D1. Would you say that happens more often than not, or would you say it's around like a 25% chance that the team that's best during the regular season or the best overall team you think? Because I think Kentucky should have been the best team in the NCAA this year. They at least had the most talent.
They should have been.
So, and they might have been. Who would you say was? See, that's the question.
I would say Florida was. I'd say Florida. I think they had,
but not by much of a margin though.
Yeah,
as you saw.
I mean, they had a 30-game winning streak. Mm-hmm. I thought that. They just had a bad game. I just thought they had a bad game.
They're not that great of a team. They didn't have the margin to you know what I'm saying? Like, they didn't have the cogs that allowed for a big win in the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
Every game was going to be frustrating.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely true. We'll probably pull up the national champions going back.
That's exactly what I was doing. I wanted to ask you. So we go Louisville last year. Yes, right? There you go.
Kentucky with Anthony Davis.
Exactly.
Yes. Connecticut, we discussed.
Duke's an interesting one because there were upsets in that year as well. They were not a projected victor. They were they were a team that kind of came. They were.
But they had like Kyle Singler, who was an NBA player.
Shire part of that team too?
I think it might have been.
I know Zubek started at center.
Yeah.
Ryan Kelly, I think.
The Plumleys were on that team.
Ooh,
they're doing well in the NBA now. North Carolina with Hansborough, definitely. Mm-hmm. Kansas, that was the year that Derrick Rose and company choked in making free throws.
That's another situation, but that time the Kansas team was a lot better than this UConn team.
Yes,
it's interesting.
Absolutely.
And then you look at Florida the 2 years before, they had an unbelievable team.
Yeah, NBA play. So I think on the whole, the best teams, or at least close to the best teams, win. And the fact is, UConn didn't even win, if I'm not mistaken, they didn't win the Big East tournament.
No.
So,
I think they were. I had something on that. As far as the not the conference championship, not the regular season championship, it's kind of crazy. Here you go. The first team to win the national championship without winning its regular season or conference tournament. The last team to do that was Arizona, 1997.
Wow.
So, ESPN says some info with that one. I thought that was really interesting. Oh, here, another one, right? UConn's first team to win national championship despite not playing in any postseason tournament the previous season, NC State, 1974.
So that's deceiving because it makes it seem like they didn't earn a spot in the tournament.
They
pulled themselves out. But
did they earn a spot last year? I'm trying to remember.
In the tournament?
Yeah.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? Were they good enough?
I think they already disqualified themselves.
Right.
I actually don't know. I don't know if they would have. But Stats, let's get to our first PSA of the day, and then we'll roll into a little bit of what up with that.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. For free ideas on how to save, go to feedthepig.org.
It's What Up With Taking on the issues of today with soul.
Yeah. I woke up this morning and I got out of bed. Got a big old box of popcorn to clear my head. Went to the theater and down I sat. We're going to the movies with What Up With That. Movie.
What Up With That? All right, Brad, we got quite a few categories, quite a few topics to go through today for What Up With That. We got some interesting things going on in the NBA right now. This past week, the Brooklyn Nets beat the Miami Heat. You know, okay, they beat them, but they've now swept them during the 2013-14 season. Only three times in NBA history has a champion, an eventual champion in the NBA, been swept during that regular season by any team. What up with that?
Yeah, don't look now, but back in whenever it was, late October, when I said the Nets were my pick to come out of the East, you know, this is kind of what I envisioned, that veteran team coming together. They had the players. I just wasn't sure if the age was going to catch up to them. And it seems like Jason Kidd's managed the minutes pretty well. Garnett hasn't played in a while, and I wonder whether that's injury-related or, you know, just rest, and they're covering it by saying it's an injury. But they look good, and I don't think the Heat should take the Nets lightly. They seem to me to be a better matchup right now than the Pacers are. They've got the size. They have guys that they can throw at LeBron. They, you know, Joe Johnson, Paul Pierce, Andre Kirilenko, Allen Anderson, just a bunch of guys. They can shoot outside. They've got a decent amount of size inside. They've got the veteran players. They obviously don't have the veteran coach. I think it depends on how the seedings play out, and there's so much fluidity right now in the seedings. I think if the Nets get to avoid the Heat, there's a good chance they'll meet them in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think the Nets today, barring any injuries, beat the Pacers. So I think the Nets are legit. Your thoughts?
They're arguably the best team in the Eastern Conference since we turned the calendar to 2014. They currently are on their best home winning streak in franchise history. A lot of what you said there, they have a lot of cogs that have been in the playoffs before. They even have the old Celtics, which is one of the reasons why we like them so much, in addition to them being a solid team. Is Kevin Garnett going to be healthy enough to play 30 minutes a game? Is he going to be needed for 30 minutes a game is the question. I remember him rebounding the ball 17 times, three games in a row, last postseason for the Celtics, which is nuts. And that was playing, I think that was after playing 60-plus games in the season previous to that. So it's amazing what these old guys can do for a Nets team that has already lost Brook Lopez, was 10-21 in 2013 with Jason Kidd at the helm. Went through the trade to get Marcus Thornton, sent away Jason Terry, is rehabbing the offseason.
Made a great contribution in that game the other night. Like, that's what he does. He hits threes off the bench.
Was
great.
He the one who fouled LeBron, quote-unquote, did not foul, but fouled LeBron James on the
Johnson.
Layup?
I think that was
Johnson.
Johnson.
Okay. Because that was really interesting. I know that's been a topic of choice, but shouldn't the Heat have won that game? Like, they scored 87 points, I think, or 86 points against the Nets team. That's pathetic. The Nets are not that strong of a defensive team. The Heat are...
especially with Garnett not on the court.
Exactly. I'm really looking forward to seeing what the Plumlees do. And you know, we mentioned them earlier. If you know, Phoenix gets in, the Brothers will be in the playoffs just a few years after winning or being a part of the national championship team. I think both of them were. So there's a lot that this Nets team can do. I don't know if you had any more on the Nets Heat, but by the way, the same thing happened in the Western Conference. This is two different teams, though. The Thunder and the Spurs... the Thunder swept all four games from the Spurs, including ending their 19-game winning streak.
Mm-hmm.
Best in the NBA this season. Does that mean that the Thunder are your pick to win it in the West?
Yeah, and they have been. And I think that the one team that the Spurs match up terribly against is the Thunder. Yeah. And if they match up in a series, it'd have to be in the conference finals. I'll take the Thunder going away. I think the Spurs right now are going to benefit from the fact that the Clippers and Thunder are going to have to beat each other up in a conference semifinal series. You know, the question is, you know, I guess we're kind of getting off track a little bit with What Up With That, but something to think about is, can the Spurs run up and down the court with the Rockets, if that's who they're facing? And that the Rockets are looking like they're going to be the 4 seed, the Blazers likely the 5. The Rockets like to get up and down. The Spurs are like a slow-it-down team. It's which style is going to win out.
The Rockets don't play defense. I'm sorry. James Harden doesn't play defense, so they could take advantage of the guard play in that situation. It depends on
exactly
what pace you're playing at, though. That really is a huge part of it. You're right, because the big men are really... I don't know if I would say that they max each other out, but they're very similar as far as production goes.
Yeah.
So that will be interesting as far as the guard play goes, because Harden can take over a game, but the Spurs team ball is amazing. It's just interesting when it comes to their three-point shooting. Can the Rockets actually play defense against the three-point shooting, which is really what the Rockets' expertise is?
Well, it's interesting because I was reading an article in Sports Illustrated yesterday about Patrick Beverley and how he's transformed their defense. I'm pretty sure they're a top five defense right now. I don't know if it's defensive rating. By some pretty well-accepted metric, they're a top five defense. And a Patrick Beverley-Tony Parker matchup would be very exciting to watch because Patrick Beverley is just such a nudnik and such a...
Well, we know what he did last year.
Exactly.
And earlier this year to Westbrook.
And he doesn't care. That's what makes Patrick Beverley such a fun player to watch. He's a bulldog. He'll absolutely plow through you if he has to just to get the W. But I don't feel like he's a dirty player. I feel like he's a very aggressive, confident defender, and I love that about him.
What's interesting is last few weeks, Daniel Weiner and I, we went back and forth a lot on the NBA, and I think that this conversation can be 30 minutes, and I want it, like, honestly, I want to continue talking about this because Beverly's still out. Beverly is not, he is still recovering from a knee injury, which almost sent him out for the regular season. We don't know, they said indefinitely, then they said he didn't need surgery, then it was only a couple weeks. He's soon to be coming back. It could be within the next week or two. But if he's not at 100% when the playoffs start, are the Rockets your... Because I like the Portland Trailblazers as a sleeper. I think they might come out of the West just because...
Out of the West?
Yes,
entirely?
Yes.
Wow.
This would be my dark horse just because they have completely fallen under the radar. LaMarcus Aldridge was out for a while. That was one of the reasons why they went under. They're a terrible defensive team. I understand that. And almost every team that wins a championship or is close to a championship is a defensive team, and that's the problem with this pick. But if there is a team that's going to fly under the radar and could sneak out, they're going to have two relatively easy matchups just in the way of the... just because they're not going to have to face the Thunder, most likely. If they face the Rockets and the Spurs, I think they have a chance just if the threes aren't falling for the Rockets and the Spurs.
Yeah, it's hard for me to think, because I think that... I mean, Rockets, Spurs, Thunder is a pretty tough road if that's who they're playing.
Who says that Westbrook makes it through another postseason? He had played every single NBA game. I'm sorry, every single college, high school, and NBA game through, I think, his first four or five seasons.
Yep.
Then he played last year. Beverly got him injured. He's only played like 40 or 50 games since.
Yep.
So, and he's had a few different injury bouts. Who says he makes it through the playoffs? And say they face maybe even Memphis, or they face some just stupid team that can upset one or two teams, but that they end up getting the easy third matchup. I don't know. I just like those first two matchups for Portland just because if a team's going to be shooting from the outside, just like in college, in a few games you might be able to steal them, and LaMarcus can put up 40 on a few nights. You also have some just great shooters in Portland as well. If the shooting goes their way, that's the reason why I see them as a dark horse.
Yeah, no. Portland's top seven is up there as good as any other top seven.
One of the best starting lineups in the league, too.
It's just the consistency with them.
Oh, definitely.
It's about seeing if Damian Lillard can... you know, take that step up. He hasn't been the same player since before the All-Star break. All right, Stats, next question. The New York Daily News reports that the Jets, quote, really like the idea of pairing free agent Chris Johnson with Chris Ivory, and that a potential deal will, quote, come down to the money. What up with that?
All right, so I've been so focused on Chris Johnson, the Celtics, that I've completely forgot about Chris Johnson of the former Tennessee Titans. All right, when it comes down to Chris Johnson, I have no idea what to read about him, but I feel like he'd do well on the Jets. It just feels weird, but I feel like he has a similar way of just coming out of nowhere. It makes no sense, but I feel like he'd go for 1,000 yards with the Jets this year.
The thing with him is, I feel like when he gets his payday, his worst season came the year after he signed that first huge contract. And I'm worried that if you give him a heavy contract, a lot of years, a lot of guaranteed money, he shuts it down. He starts eating cheeseburgers, doesn't get in the weight room like he used to. That's my biggest concern with Chris Johnson. But if you look at the Jets' track record, they seem like they're able to develop running backs.
Yeah.
I mean, Sean Green was a decent running back with them. Like, he's horrible on the Titans. Who else have they had in the past? Thomas Jones was great for them. There was another running back who I'm blanking on, but Bilal Powell was putting up 100-yard games this past season. I think that it could work. I like the balance of Chris Ivory being the bruiser and Chris Johnson being the speed demon. I think that it's a nice blend to have, whereas the Patriots had, you know, Stephen Ridley and LeGarrette Blount as that 1-2 punch. I'm just not sure that Chris Johnson has a lot of football left. That's my only concern. He's got a lot of tread on those tires. I'm not sure where the passion is still with him. But then again, the last point I'm going to make on this is, when you're in New York, I just feel like it's hard to quit because there's so much scrutiny. There's so much pressure to perform And if you don't, you're going to hear about it. So in that sense, I think he's probably going to get that kick in the butt. I would give him a short deal, make him earn it for one more year, a la Aqib Talib with that one-year, $5 million contract. See if he can put it together again, and then let him get a payday. But I'm not ready to give him all that much money because he was getting 60-yard receiving touchdowns but only rushing for 50 yards this season. So his numbers were a little bit inflated this year.
Let me see if you remember how many
If you're listening and you want to call, do you want to tell them the number?
Do you want to do my number instead? Okay, yeah. 781-258-4149. 781-258-4149. You know, we've still had some trouble with the studio phone, so just, yeah, call into my phone number, 781-258-4149, and you can get on the show.
Awesome. So, yeah, you think it could work?
As far as going forward, do you remember how many yards Chris Johnson rushed for last year? Let me say an over-under. Do you remember if it was over-under 1,000 yards?
I'm gonna say it was over.
Yeah, so he's been over for the last six seasons. So,
but what was the number? What was the yards per carry?
Yards per carry, I think, was a career low at 4. But I don't know why. I feel like to me,
67 yards per game does not scream number one running back.
Is he gonna be number one running back?
Well, that's the thing. Is he gonna get paid like a number one running back? That's the question. If you can get him for a couple million, 3-4 million, fine deal. But if you're going to pay him like a number one running back, which I just feel like the Jets are so irresponsible that they would do, then he's not good enough for that.
That makes sense. All right, and on to our next topic. The MLB is renaming their annual awards for the best reliever in each league after Mariano Rivera and Trevor Hoffman. At first, I thought it was like one award, which would have been fun because it would have been like the Mariano Hoffman. I would have really enjoyed that as a name for a award, but they're going to be doing one for separate leagues. What up with that?
Well, it's funny because when you wrote that, it should be called the Mariano Hoffman. I started playing with different permutation of it. So that I'm thinking it's the Treviano Rivoffman Award. But anyway, yeah, I'm not surprised. Two best closers in the history of the game. I also think that maybe it should just be Mariano Rivera because when you're put them next to each other, I don't really think it's that close. I think Mariano Rivera was that much better than Trevor Hoffman. I've never heard of, the best offensive player in the game is not called, it's not the Hank Aaron and Babe Ruth Award, it's the Hank Aaron Award. So my thought is, when do we do, co-awards?
You mean like Miguel Cabrera coming forward? I don't know. I know exactly what you're saying.
I'm just saying, like, why can they not just choose one? No feelings are going to be hurt. It just seems weird to be like, yeah, I'm getting the Mariano Rivera and Trevor Hoffman Award.
Is the Hank Aaron Award for service, though?
I don't even know. I thought the Hank Aaron Award was something that had to do with, I think you're thinking Roberto Clemente, maybe?
Oh.
But yeah. The Hank Aaron Award, what is that?
Top hitter in each league.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So I'm just saying, like, what if it was
I never
Hank
hear
Aaron
about and, that, though. Aren't these awards, like, very brush under the, like,
I think they usually give it away during in the playoffs. I remember seeing Miguel Cabrera getting it before a game.
Doesn't the MVP get a lot more talk? The Cy Young gets a lot more talk.
Absolutely.
I just don't think that's award. I think it was called the Rolaids Award before or something like that.
No idea.
I think that's exactly. We had no idea what these awards were before. I think they might talk about it this year and then we'll be like, all right, nice job with the reliever. Yeah. Relievers really don't matter that much. And that's the funny thing. And plus, they're going to give it to the guy who gets the most saves or has a pretty solid ERA and the most saves, which is pretty stupid.
No, it's those awards, even like Silver Sluggers, I couldn't even tell you who got the Silver Sluggers at most of the positions last year.
And the plus, the funny thing is that the Gold Glove for a long time was the guy who was just well-known and kind of hit well and maybe fielded.
Yeah, well, that's how you think about it. Like, Torrey Hunter had it for, whatever, 10 straight years, Ichiro 10 straight years. And it's like you wonder whether, some schmo in Kansas City who might be a better outfielder is ever going to, get that award. But let's move on to the next one, Stats. This was kind of the humorous moment of the week, at least for me. I thought it was hilarious. So Brandon Spikes, former Patriot great linebacker, took a shot at the Pats on Twitter, calling his time in New England, quote, 4 years a slave. What up with that?
All right. So I was watching, I think it was the ESPN show, Numbers Never Lie, and they were talking about just... How are you a slave if you're being paid millions of dollars for playing football? But anyway, that's kind of like where it kind of hits the weird part. I know it's funny, but like when you actually tear it apart and you're thinking about the actual idea behind the tweet, it's pretty awful that he would say something like that. I know it's humorous, and then it is, but I just wanted to take that and just mention it first. But the funny thing is that he's a part of the Bills who I think, barely ever beat the Patriots, and he's really writing a cash that writing a check that can his team really cash? You know, I don't think so, but who knows? It would be really funny to see if they sweep the Pats. Like, that would be hilarious, like, because then you'd see him go on a rampage.
Oh, absolutely.
I think this all comes from the Patriots being a lockdown organization, in which they're always one, and they don't let you do something like this. He wouldn't do this if he's a part of the Patriots.
Yeah, no, I think what like you're getting at is he was enslaved in the sense that now he's liberated. He can say what he wants, you know, to the media. And I think also what he didn't like was, I mean, I think he claimed that when they deactivated him, or they cut him, whatever, they put him on injured reserve. They said one thing when he said it was really something else. Like, in other words, they lied about why he was on injured reserve.
That's Patriots MO.
He's just a nut, man. Like, you know, he got busted for the PEDs earlier. He had the adult video. I'll leave it at that. The adult video that came out of him with his girl. As much as I love how he's able to stop the run, and he's one of the best run stoppers, he can't guard anyone coming out of the flat or a tight end, and he's not a smart player. So, you know, good riddance. I'm excited to see him twice a year and just see Bill Belichick exploit the hell out of him.
It's going to be
a beautiful thing.
When you, I think it was the Pittsburgh Steelers a while back, that Belichick just enjoyed making fun of, really, just taking a part of that secondary, especially after they put a lot of words into the media. And I think that's really something that Belichick doesn't want, bulletin board material going towards the other team. And what's interesting is that the Patriots are on their last legs here. This is going to be the last few years of this dynasty, and is Johnny Manziel going to be a part of the new dynasty?
Well, that's the million dollar question.
See, that's the funny thing. We got a lot of Patriots stuff going forward, which will be exciting. We have a few more What Up With That topics. Now this is, you know, we just will mention the NFL draft. Now, the NBA draft, I think Nick Stauskas talked a little bit about earlier this week about entering the NBA draft, but we have two other big names, Joel Embiid, Julius Randle, projected top five picks, each one of them, going in the draft. As far as the NBA draft goes, and everybody, and obviously we know where we're coming from, you know, what up with that?
For one, Jabari Parker still is not declared. Something interesting to note. There was talk earlier in the season that financially he's pretty stable where he comes from. He doesn't need the money to come out early. I don't think his stock is as high as it could be, but the fact is he's so much hype, and I find it hard to believe that he wouldn't get drafted in the top five by a GM that wants to take a chance on him just because he has all the tools. Before I keep going, you are listening to Bedtime Sports with Brad and Stats Adam on KWUR Clayton 90.3 FM. Here's my, because we're not going to be here for the draft, so we're not going to be able to discuss this. Here's my thought on who I want if I'm a team that doesn't have, that is just looking to contend, but doesn't really have a lot of players like the Celtics. I want a shooting, I want someone that can score themselves. So I do not want Joel Embiid, because I don't think he's going to have an offensive game like Anthony Davis. I want a small forward or a power forward that can create for themselves. And in that respect, that's why I want Randall, Wiggins, or Parker. I want to stay away from Embiid, because I just feel like in today's day and age, you can get centers that can get some block shots, get some rebounds. Robin Lopez is one. Is Robin Lopez a guy that you would want to build your team around? I know they're not on the same level, but all I'm saying is you look at the teams that are winning now, the LeBrons, the Kevin Durants, the Kobes, the Paul Pierces, those guys, or even Garnett, just think of all those teams. They have to have players who they can go to at the end of games to put the ball in the basket. And to me, a small forward like Wiggins or Parker, Wiggins being more the prototypical small forward, is the guy I want. That's just my thought. I don't want a center who is going to be a black hole on offense. That's my take on who I want and who I don't want.
The tough thing is about potential. You know, 5-10 years ago, you could go into the draft and see what you're getting out of players. Even when Hibbert came into the draft as a big man, you weren't really sure, but he seemed to at least show more of what he could do during his time in Georgetown.
If you told me today that Hibbert of the future was in this draft, I wouldn't want to take him over some of those other guys. I don't think Hibbert is a game-changing player.
He might be the best defensive player in the league, though. So where does defense fall in line for you? Because the Celtics defense has been awful recently.
So here's the thing. I think you can coach up defense. I think this is something we've talked about. I think you need to get it. We talked about Paul Pierce was an example of that, of someone that never really played great defense. Yes. But when you get him in an environment where defense is important and you teach them up, I mean, they have the athletic skills. Defense is not usually something that you're bad at. If you have the athletic skills, it's about effort and commitment. I think you can teach a guy that's young, that doesn't commit himself on the defensive end, to do that.
Interesting.
So that's my thought there. I think offense is harder to develop. Look at Dwight Howard. He's still developing an offensive game, and he's been in the league for like 10 years. That's my thought, is I want a guy that has a polished offensive game that needs work on defense as opposed to the other way around. And that's just my personal philosophy.
Especially for a lot of these teams that have trouble scoring. You know, the teams that are the worst in the league are typically that. Teams that win championships are obviously among the best in the defensive end, and then the offense can come along, and you can make up some points with a three-point shot. As far as Parker goes, he's supposed to be a terrible defender. Wiggins is supposed to be a great defender, which is interesting.
Yep.
That's the disparity, I think, between the first and the third pick there. And that's why Embiid falls somewhere in between and Parker fine. You know, it's really interesting. And I think going forward, you're looking at a situation in which if a team, well, here, I'll just use Celtics as an example. If they fall out of the top three or top four, they might be trading that. Because this is not...
I don't want to even entertain that possibility, okay. Stats.
And because you're so excited that they fall down.
I've been all in on Tankapalooza. If the Celtics don't get a top five pick, I'm gonna be pretty devastated. I've committed myself to rooting against the Celtics for that exact reason. If they get a 6 or 7, the season will be a failure.
One last question about the Celts here. Whenever I watch the Celtics, I'm going to do that tonight. I can't root against them. Obviously, I can kind of root in between. I can enjoy what they're doing and what they're doing wrong, and then be at the end of the game, oh, okay, well, they lost. I can't do that. When I was at your place when we watched the Final Four, I was able to do that because we weren't watching the game. Yep. We weren't enjoying the game. I can't root for Jared Bayless to go 0-15.
Oh, I can.
Even when you're watching the game, because you don't watch the games. I don't think have you watched the game this season?
I've seen a few games. I like live look-ins on NBA TV. Something like that.
Max 5,
something
right? Like, max I think 5. I've watched about 60.
Yep.
So it just does not... even when Jordan Crawford was playing for the team... I want him to go 30-for-30. It just does not compute to be able to root against them. If you watch that many games, I just can't.
No, I understand that. I can't. That's the thing, and I've not been watching for that exact reason. I think it's unnatural for a fan to root for their team to lose. But that's why when I'm following a game and I see the Celtics are losing, or if they're up 8 with 5 minutes to go against
Atlanta,
the Hawks, I'm
Detroit.
Like getting pissed off. I know I texted you saying, "What the hell are they doing?"
Especially with Orlando beating Brooklyn that night.
It was
nearly
a huge blown opportunity. Just going back to that Hawks game, Satch was hilarious. Yeah. I was listening to Felger and Maz.
Yeah.
So I think with 5:18 to go, the Celtics were up 89-80.
Okay.
The Hawks finished the game with 105 points. So in 5 minutes and 18 seconds, the Hawks scored 25 points, which is good for like a 54-point pace for a quarter. Tankapalooza in full force. I love it.
All right, one last question then, because I'm really enjoying talking about this, and this might be the last time we talk about it before the end of the season. You know, most likely it will be. Is there a little ML Carr on this team? Remember ML Carr, I think it was the 1997 team for the Tim Duncan draft. Is there a little bit of that where it's, let's enjoy this. I know they modeled the roster around losses. People have been saying it's a little weird that they really lost that Hawks game. Hawks aren't that good.
No, they're terrible. Pistons they don't even want to be in the playoffs.
Pistons aren't that good. These are teams in the middle of the East, which means lower... rung of the NBA, you know, the second to lowest rung, I'd say. The Celtics are on the lowest.
Yep.
Would you say they're throwing these? Because I think
you're watching these games. You cannot.
I didn't watch either of those, though. Okay, I didn't watch those.
So the eyeball, the eye test, what is it like? What does it tell you from games you've seen in general?
Ooh, they can't.
there was one clip I saw.
It's tough.
Of that, I don't know if you saw the Hawks highlights. There was one clip where the Celtics had just hit a three to go up two or go up one. 3 minutes to go. The Hawks come back, and Kyle Korver, the only guy in the Hawks that you can't leave wide open, has no one on his quarter of the court. Literally, just in the corner, wide open. No one picked him up. I saw another time where Damari Carroll got a layup at the hoop. Rondo just standing there, kind of watching him go. I'm not sure they're tanking, so I think on the offensive end, they're not missing on purpose. But I think on defense, where you know the rotations are so important, I don't, from highlights I've seen, and again, that's highlights, I'm not seeing the type of commitment on the defensive end that, you know, makes me think now that as players, they're probably tanking. But I mean, it's got to be hard for Brad Stevens to toe the line. Like, he knows he's going to be around next year. His job's not on the line, but he also knows that his team's not going to be able to do anything if they... you know, don't tank. What is being the 7th or 8th worst record actually do for you?
What's interesting is that, just one last thing, is that Danny Ferrier, you know, we're talking about the Atlanta Hawks, the general manager of the Hawks, talks about, we don't want to be the 8th seed. We want to be a better team, and that's tough when you're in the middle of the league. And by the way, Danny Ainge just talked about the defense being awful recently, yeah. So it's interesting. But yeah, we can move on. I think that was definitely exhausted the talk. We have Josh Hamilton out 6 to 8 weeks after a great start due to a torn ligament in his thumb that requires surgery. What up with that?
Yeah, I mean, really all I have to say on this one is this happened again. This happened with Pedroia last year, diving headfirst into a base. I've played baseball for most of my whole life. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand why there's ever a need to slide in headfirst. A, to first base, where it's slower to actually slide than to run into the base. And B, sliding feet first allows you to stand up right away. I just don't get people sliding headfirst. Do you know why they do that? I've never understood why sliding headfirst is preferable.
Forget what I was listening to this past week. But they talked about, maybe it was Behind the Bets with Gil Alexander. They were talking about sliding in ahead first. Would you want to, because they're starting this in the minor leagues, and of course minor leagues are at such a lower pay scale than the major leagues, but they've implemented fines for sliding head first into first base, I'm pretty sure. Would you want to implement them for first base and or the rest of the bases? Head first?
That's so hard, because I can tell you this from my experience, when you slide, you don't even think. It's a weird thing. Like if you were to tell me, Brad, slide right now, I would probably not be able to slide properly, because it's something that you just do naturally.
Yeah.
So I think that's hard to enforce. The sliding into first base thing, I think, is a little bit better, because there's really no reason. You don't have to, get out of the way of a double play ball. Just run through the base. That's a natural motion. I understand with slide I think with first base you have a shot. The rest of the bases you can't do that.
Should they implement the softball base, the extra one, so they can?
That's not. I don't get why that's a bad idea.
Because what's the difference, right?
Yeah. Realistically, I don't know what the difference is with that. Yeah. Do you think they could enforce a head first sliding rule?
See, that's interesting. If they've already tried in the minor leagues, why not? It's kind of like the D
league. Is it working? From what you read?
I think just from what I've heard, and it's very small from what I've heard, it's more of the idea that they can't enforce that much of a penalty because they make so much less than major leaguers.
Yep.
They're just killing the salary of a minor leaguer if they're doing enough. So I think the problem is that they're trying to find an in-between money value that would actually allow them to enforce it but not be detrimental to a player who has been doing that his entire life. Being grandfathered in, that's the question. Do you want to grandfather players in? You can't do that for a rule like this because you're trying to help a team, helping the league, because you already have injuries in the first place. Since you take out roids, you already have so many injuries in the first place.
No, it's so true. Interesting. All right, next question, stats. So Adam Silver says that the NBA might subsidize college players to make them feel better about staying in school. What up with that?
Is this against the Mark Cuban idea of using the D League as a feeder system? Because obviously college basketball is the feeder system for NBA, which is, it's like the minor leagues, as we were just discussing with MLB. Minor leagues, it's the minor leagues of the NBA. Does he want the NCAA? I think because he sees such promise in the NCAA tournament and he might be able to use that in the NBA, does he want to have that cohesion between the two still? Because I can't stand the NCAA. I much prefer them going to a different situation, maybe even go overseas or whatever they want to do. It just has to be a group of them as opposed to one or two, like Hairston going from being suspended to the D-League. I think that's the problem. So I guess the new Stern, Adam Silver, is trying to bring together the NCAA and the NBA and make something of a product where he can actually allow for better cohesion between the two when he raises the age to 20 years old.
Yeah. So are you behind him doing that?
Well, I would much rather have the different product, but if it's the NCAA and they have to go with this, I guess, because the NCAA is such a moneymaker and it seems like it's going to be on for the next decades ahead, I guess this would be something that I would like, because they deserve what they get, and you'd see a much better product out of both areas. And the draft would be really interesting too, where you have 4-year players for the most part coming out, or at least two.
Yeah,
players.
It's such an interesting dilemma, because what you're doing is you're forcing kids that come from poor backgrounds to have to forego now 2 years of being able to make millions of dollars. It's just like, at what stage is it unfair to dictate to others when they can earn a living? So that's the question. And I understand, Michael Carter Williams, there's an article about him in Sports Illustrated about how he actually thinks that, he probably would have been better off going back for a second year to be able to mature. It's a pretty stark difference between the college lifestyle and the NBA lifestyle. Stats, I saw something, I think it was Bill Simmons, so maybe you read this, where, I don't know, someone proposed this idea, which I think is genius. So, the biggest issue with the NBA and wanting to get to the NBA faster is being able to get to your second contract.
Yeah.
Right? So I think you're not eligible for that second contract, I think, till your fourth year or your fifth year. I don't know if you can look that up, but it's not important. What Bill Simmons said is, if you come out after 1 year, you can get that contract, let's say, 4 years later after you come out. If you go to college for 2 years, you get that second contract 3 years later. And if you go for 3 years to college, you get that contract 2 years later. In other words, Everyone would be on a level playing field when they could get their second contract, irrespective of when they've gone to the NBA or not. And I think that would incentivize players for sure more so, because now you're foregoing a couple years of that rookie deal, but at least now you can get to that max deal a little bit quicker.
With the NBA becoming more of an international game every year, do you force international players to go to college then?
No.
So then how does that work for them?
I don't know the technicalities of that. I think if you're saying if you're 19 years old or whatever. So there's a minimum age to be in the NBA. 19. I think it's 19. Okay, correct. So you're saying if you're 19 and you come to the NBA from Europe,
yeah,
I think it would be the same thing. I think
it should be by years
from 19.
Oh, okay, because I wasn't sure if it was freshman year, because you have different ages based on different situations.
So they need to smooth out the rules a little bit on that one.
Because it's weird when you think about it. I remember whenever I was going through grade school, you would just think about the idea that, oh, well, that kid's a lot older than I am. He's like 9 months older. Yeah. And it's like just a weird thing thinking about. So that's why it was in my head. But yeah, that's the reason why the Spurs end up picking at least one guy a year, it seems like, from overseas. And that's why they end up coming over here and they're a player that ends up being in the league. How does that work out? Do they end up getting extra benefits for going overseas? Maybe they even actually add benefits for that because they want such a global league. They may even want teams in other countries. That's something that along with the NFL, they're looking to expand even more.
So Seth, let's before we get to our next one, let's get to our second PSA and roll with that.
If someone you know is thinking of dropping out, talk to them. It could be the one thing that keeps them going. Go to boostup.org to learn more. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
All right, Stats. So in a new book, John Calipari likens the NCAA to the crumbling Soviet Union and says reform is needed. What up with that?
So the really interesting part about this is that we've just discussed a little bit about the NCAA and what it is and how it works. It's a moneymaker, really is, and we've seen over the last few years how they've done to make it even more, and they could add more NCAA teams to make more money in these tournaments and stuff like that, like they will in the BCS championship along with the extra bowls. When it comes to reform, is there something that comes to mind? Because for me, it's eradication. I don't like it. I think you separate the sports and you separate the sports and the academics. The problem is that all the connections between alma maters and alumni and everything like that, it makes such a situation in which you can have that great rooting interest when you leave college and you don't really have that much of a connection back if you remove the sports. Yeah. How does that work? I don't know if there's any reform that you like.
I just think that they need to monetize it a little bit. I know one of the other just ridiculous quotes of the week was Shabazz Napier saying there were nights where he went to sleep starving. But I don't have an answer for this. I don't have the silver bullet. But there has to be a way to pay students in the revenue, athletes in the revenue-producing sports, a.k.a. football and basketball, something to offset their living expenses. The things that – I mean, I just think that it's unfair for the school to be benefiting. I don't know if you've thought about this. Is there any other industry or work that someone could do where everyone else benefits financially except for you? I just can't think of that.
And plus, they're getting
Where's the fairness?
They're getting a quote-unquote free education. How much of that education are you using?
Exactly. That's what I'm So that argument, I think, to me is so hollow because they're not going to school for school. That is very important for a swimmer at Duke who's getting to swim and get an education at Duke and doesn't plan to pursue swimming professionally. That's where the value is. But for Joel Embiid, how valuable is the $20,000 that he saved on not having to pay for class? Zero. And if anything, Kentucky makes out better on that. They probably make more than $20,000 on Joel Embiid over the course of a season.
And we know North Carolina helped themselves by not even having classes for these kids. So maybe we shouldn't talk about that much, though, with WashU's recent acquisition.
Yep.
But as far as... we've definitely exhausted our NCAA talk today. Yep. So now we're going to move on to a little bit of our little playoff appearances. We have the Detroit Red Wings just clinch their playoff streak. They continued their streak this past year. The Spurs did as well. Red Wings are 23 straight playoff appearances. Spurs at 17. That's all with Duncan and Popovich, by the way. Unbelievable. What up with that?
It's absolutely mind-boggling that in this day and age with free agency how it is, and in a league where there's quite a bit of parity. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of cyclicality in the NHL. Teams go up and down. That the Red Wings have been in the playoffs 23 straight years is just mind-boggling. And I say more power to you guys. That's pretty incredible.
You have the lockouts, you have the different commissioners, you have all these different, all these different players that have cycled in and out, and that's with both the Spurs and the Red Wings. And the crazy thing is, obviously, we understand why. When you make the playoffs, you're making more than half of the teams. You're better than half the teams,
yep,
typically. The weird thing about these two is that they've done so well.
You're talking about the Spurs and the Red Wings?
Exactly. Yep. They've done so well. It's not even like they've barely made it in a couple of years.
They're not like the Hawks, who make it seemingly every year and then get bounced in the first round. Exactly. They make it and they win.
It's amazing. You don't see this too often, and I just feel like, the Yankees... That can't happen as much in the MLB, even if they expand to 10 teams in the playoffs combined. When you look at a sport that has 16 of its 30 teams in the playoffs, this happens, but when you win and you win championships along with it, these two streaks are just amazing, and it'd be a lot of fun to see, because they usually are the grizzled veteran teams, and that's the reason why it's exciting to see them, because the old teams win the NBA. Hockey, I'm not actually sure. I think you would lean towards a little bit of just who's your best goalie, but...
A lot of times that's the most instrumental part.
And I know they've gone through quite a few goalies, from Osgood to, I think, Legacy. I'm trying to think of a few others at the top of my head in Detroit.
Well, they got Jimmy Howard now.
Yeah.
And their coach is the highest paid NHL coach. They got the best NHL coach in the game. All right, Stats, let's get to our last one-up with that. Massachusetts UMass sophomore guard Derek Gordon came out as the first openly gay Division I basketball player. What up with that?
All right, so it's the last one-up with that. I'm pretty sure the reason why it is because it's not as big of a story as anybody previously who's come out. And I feel like the story might become more of a story when he continues to play college ball. Because the college football player came out, was going to be in the draft, Michael Sam, right?
But it sounds like he had actually come out to his teammates before that. So the teammates knew.
So the interesting part is that is non-media, yes, team. This one is pretty sure he's going to be playing in UMass basketball next year. That's yes, media. That's obviously a lower media circle than a better football team or better basketball team. But a tournament team... and a team that now has them being surrounded, is that going to be a story in the fall? I don't think so, actually. It might be more of a story than it is right now, but it'd just be interesting.
It's a very interesting story, and the timing for me is very interesting. Exactly. Because I think by doing it now, it's going to be out of sight, out of mind, I would think, at least a lot of it, by the time basketball season rolls around next season. And I think the way we are as a society, with how everyone has to be politically correct, I think it's dangerous for people to make this a big deal, just given that there's a few that have come out already. And if you start to make this a big deal, you get portrayed as a bigot. And so I don't think a lot of people are going to want to test that out. Stats, so you mentioned that there was something, you had something special for the show. Is it now a good time or is it short?
It's actually pretty short.
Oh, okay.
It's not even for the show. It's just for you, man.
Oh.
I actually won a contest.
Oh, it's
not for the show. Yeah, here, you want to? Do you want me to tell you now?
Absolutely. All
right, so I won a contest with winning a package for MLB.TV. Would you, as a present to you for all the years and allowing me to be on the show? And I know you were talking about on Saturday how we wanted to watch the Red Sox and you couldn't watch it because it wasn't the free MLB TV game of the day, and then we had to go through my account. Would you like my MLB.TV package?
Nice of you, Stats. I'll happily accept that. Wow. You win that through, like, retweeting something?
Through the Yahoo Fantasy Sports. I'm the commissioner of our team, and they have these commissioner appreciation awards. So as my appreciation from one commissioner to the commissioner of Bedtime Sports.
Appreciate that very much. Thank you. This is a heartfelt moment here at the K-Word Studios. Wow. That's great. Thanks a lot, Stats.
Of course. Of course, man.
All right, I guess we can do a little power rankings before we wrap up the show. So let's get to that.
So I forgot to jump to the song where it actually starts. I gave it a little applause before, I guess. The John Tesh Round Ball Rock, which I just really enjoy as the background for our NBA Power Rank. So we talked a lot about the NBA before. We talked a lot about just what's going on in the NBA. We didn't really talk about who's your best team right now. Who's your pick to win the championship? And what team do you think is going to fall out of the playoffs? Like, what do you think as far as, like, I'll go off the top of my head right here what I think my champion right now is. The Indiana Pacers,
wow.
Yes, over the Los Angeles Clippers. And the team that I think is going to bow out early in the playoffs is the Oklahoma City Thunder. I mentioned the injury troubles. I mentioned a lot about that. I understand they're one of the most consistent teams. But this is, you know, it's obviously my bold picks of the day, I guess, all three of them. But the Clippers, as I mentioned before, not the championship team that I thought before. But I really like a lot of the changes that have occurred to them. They have a better second unit, better coach, obviously, this year. And then, of course, the Pacers. They are being written off in every single possible way. I like them because they're obviously the best defense in the league.
Here's my bold pick. I think if the Memphis Grizzlies get into the 8 seed, I could see them upsetting the Spurs. They did it a few years ago. When they're healthy with Gasol, they've been an amazing team. It's when they didn't have Gasol that they were very mediocre. That's my upset special. Best team right now, I still, again, assuming health, I like the Thunder to come out of the West. I like the Clippers as the second best team, but they're gonna be playing each other likely in the conference semis, so they won't be able to face off in the final conference finals. And honestly, I'm gonna stick with my Nets pick. I gotta stick with you.
Like,
you make
it.
A pick in the beginning of the season and it's still alive, you gotta stick with it. So I'm gonna say the Nets come out of the East. I think the Thunder win the championship.
The quick thing on the Memphis, that's like the hot upset pick. You know, in the NCAA tournament, when you always have that hot 12-5 upset? That's the hot 12-5 upset right there with the Memphis Grizzlies taking on the Spurs, because they match up so well once again, because Saul, Randolph, obviously, and then the guards can actually, you know, play defense like Conley and Tony Allen. What's interesting, hopefully Tayshaun Prince is back. I know he had a little injury before with the foot. What's interesting is about your dark horse. My dark horse was the Hawks.
Yep.
Obviously, Horford's injured. Do the Hawks have a chance? I know I took the Pacers as my champion. Do the Hawks have a chance against the Pacers?
If they get the one. No.
No chance.
I know that
I know
that they won a game in Indiana, mm-hmm. and they only allowed 23 points, but I just don't think that they have the firepower to get it done over the course of a 7-game series. Okay, fine. You were talking about a couple games. I think max 6. I think the Pacers are going to get it together for the playoffs. I like your pick of them to make it to the finals. You say to win it all?
Went over the Clippers.
I think that the Pacers are going to be fine. I think they just hit a rough patch, and once the playoffs comes, they're going to, you know, tie it together. But I'm not concerned about that. I think the Pacers would cruise over the Hawks. I think the team that I'm worried about is the Pacers playing the Wizards, because I think they're young, they can score, they've got some size down low. You know, Gortat can neutralize a Hibbert. Nene can neutralize David West. And then you got guard on guard, and I think the Wizards might have better guards. I think the Pacers are a better team, but the Wizards are scary. I want the Heat to play the Wizards.
So what about the Bobcats then? Because I feel like the Bobcats are a similar team to the Wizards as far as the big man in Al Jefferson, the small, is in Kemba Walker, Gerald Henderson.
I think the Bobcats suck. I honestly think they're huge frauds.
5-game winning streak.
I know that. Not buying them
yet. You know what they're facing tonight?
Who they got?
Celtics.
Oh, okay.
If they win tonight, they would match their longest winning streak in franchise history.
Wow. Very impressive.
So no chance.
The Bobcats. Kind of sad that a 6-game winning streak to their franchise.
Can they beat the Toronto Raptors?
Yes.
Okay, they suck, but they can beat the Toronto Raptors.
The Raptors suck.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad. I'm glad. Okay, anybody else suck in the NBA right now in the playoffs?
No. I think that's it. All right, Stas, let's wrap up the show. Let's get do you have any the final music, final thoughts?
Oh, yes, final music, yes.
Get that rolling.
So, as far as end of the show stuff, you know, we're coming down on the end here. I think we may only have one or two shows left together in our entire semester here, but it'll be real exciting to get this going. I know we have the NBA playoffs. Next week, we'll be previewing the NBA playoffs. You heard our picks, kind of picks here. We'll have a lot more of the first round matchups in, you know, actuality by next week. Golden State Warriors, Phoenix Suns, Dallas Mavericks, Memphis Grizzlies. Who are your teams to make it in those last four? We'll go out on that. I have Memphis missing it, but you have Memphis taking out the Spurs. You have Memphis making it.
I got Memphis and Dallas. I think the Suns don't make it. And I think that it's possible that the Mavericks pass the Warriors for the sixth seed. I think that that's
big loss by the Warriors.
Horrible basketball right now.
Big loss by the Warriors. But it's been a great show, and we'll definitely do something next week. You might be here next week. Do we know for sure?
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah, still up in the air. I'll definitely be back before the end of the semester. For Stats Adam, I'm Bradley Basker. Thanks for listening. We'll be back on the air next week. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.